Suta Uvacha Dvapare Samunu Prapte Tritiye Yuga Paryaye Jata Parasara Yogi Vasavyam Kalaya Hare Suta Uvacha Dvapare Samanu Parapte Tritiye Yuga Paryaye Jata Parashara Yogi Vasavyam Kalaya Hare When the second millennium overlapped the third, the great sage Vyasadeva was born of Parasara in the womb of Satyavati, the daughter of Vasu. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There is a chronological order of the four millenniums, namely Satya, Dwapar, Treta, and Kali. But sometimes there is overlapping. During the regime of Vaibhishvat Manu, there was an overlapping of the 28th round of the four, 28th round of the four millenniums. And the third millennium appeared prior to the second. In that particular millennium, Lord Sri Krishna also descends. And because of this, there was some particular alteration. The mother of the great sage was Satyavati, the daughter of the Vasu, fisherman. And the father was the great Parashara Muni. That is the history of Vyasadeva's birth. After every millennium is divided into three periods, and each period is called a sandhya, Vyasadeva appeared in the third sandhya of that particular age. A great mystery is being understood. Srila Prabhupada explains here that the natural chronological order of the four millenniums is Satya Yuga and Dwapara Yuga, which means the second age, then Treta Yuga, third age, and then Kali Yuga. But it is being explained here that during the 28th round of this particular Yuga cycle of the four millenniums, the third millennium appears before the second. And in that particular millennium, Lord Sri Krishna also descends. And because of this, there was some particular alteration. There are many wonderful stories in this regard, according to the various particular of course we understand that this takes place during Brahma's lifetime at certain intervals. There is that story of Gautam Rishi. His wife, chaste, beloved companion, Ahalya, who was so very beautiful, was approached by Indra when Gautam Muni was away. And Gautam Rishi, when he discovered this, in order to teach these two souls a good lesson, he condemned Indra with a curse, and Indra, being very mortified by that particular curse, he pleaded for the mercy of Gautam Muni, and Gautam Muni cursed that a modification that his body would be covered with eyes. Of course, at the time when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared after the deliverance of Jagai and Madhai, when Indra came to see the beautiful form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was, from his heart of hearts, he was thanking Gautam Muni that he gave him thousands of eyes to see the beautiful form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So ultimately, the curse of great sages is always our blessings. When we come in contact with Lord Sri Krishna. And Ahalya was cursed to become a piece of stone. This took place in the Satya Yuga. And Ahalya also was pleading with her husband that it wasn't such a serious mistake, just a victim of circumstances. Please be kind upon me. And Gautam Rishi said that yes, during the Treta Yuga, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his avatar of Ram will place his lotus foot on you in the form of this stone, and he will cleanse you of all unwanted desires, and he will bestow upon you love of God and return you back to your original form. So she was very unhappy because it was such a long time till the third age would come. So she begged, "Will you kindly make this benediction come sooner?" So it happened to be that time when the Lord, although he arranges certain leelas in a certain way, he simultaneously gives a nice reason for it to be. So Gautam Rishi said, yes, then the Dwapara Yuga will come after Treta Yuga. Treta Yuga will come next to speed up the process. And then shortly after that, Ram stepped upon the head of Ahalya and she was delivered. And then the second yuga came after the third. You see, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and those empowered devotees of the Lord, There is no limitations that they are bound by, because ultimately Krishna is the supreme controller of all controllers. He is the absolute truth, and all relative truths are depending on his sweet will. And whatever the absolute truth decides must be done. And all relative existence is simply coordinated and orchestrated according to his sweet will. So there are no laws that bind Krishna. He sets up the universe in a certain way, but at any time, in any place, he can intervene. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunani nikontaya jagat viparivartit. Krishna says that this entire material creation is working under my direction. So, similarly, just as Krishna can change at his sweet will the chronological order of the particular yugas, if he so desires, also the principles of what we would call morality, which must be explicitly and strictly followed by all civilized human beings, especially devotees of the Lord. For Krishna, if he wants to intervene with these relative moral ideas, he can intervene and it becomes the highest type of morality, because he is the absolute truth. Morality means to live in harmony with the will of the truth. And immorality means, essentially, to be in disharmony with the truth. Why is intoxication immoral? Because Krishna has said it's immoral. There's no other reason. And because he is the absolute truth and he has said it is immoral, it is sinful, and there will be terrible karmic reaction. What makes it immoral is it is against the will of God. Why is illicit sex considered immoral? Not that the act itself is relevantly moral or immoral. It is the principle that because the Lord has forbid it, that is what makes it immoral. It is against the will of God. And because it is against the will of God, there will be tremendous degree of suffering karmic reaction for anyone who engages in such an activity. And the same for eating of meat. If Krishna says, eat meat, it's not immoral. There's no karmic reaction. But if Krishna says, do not eat meat, these are my children, don't hurt them, don't cause them pain, then because it is against the will of Krishna, it is in disharmony with Krishna's desire, it is sinful. And similarly for gambling, we have to understand that the root of all sins is to live in disharmony from the will of Krishna. That is what makes it sinful, that it is betraying God. And Krishna has created this entire material existence so that there are laws of karma, and those laws of karma are based on his will. What is his will is the law of nature. And if you go against his will, you go against the law of nature, and there will be a reaction. But at the same time, when Krishna appears in this world, He comes to display Tribhira Gunamayaira Bhavaya, that he is beyond all these laws of nature. When he came as Lord Sri Ram, he came in such a way that he was perfectly following all the laws that he created on every level, socially, culturally, morally, scripturally. He was obedient son, he was thoroughly honest, of the highest repute, always humble to all the sages and to parents. But he defied other laws of nature when it came to protecting his devotees. He was able to do superhuman feats that were beyond the limitations of anyone or anything. As Krishna, in Krishna's Leela, he appeared in such a way to show everyone that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and whatever I do is perfect because I am absolute. And whatever I do is the highest principle of morality because it is my will. Morality means the will of God. Immorality means against the will of God. Whatever is the will of God is the highest principle of morality. If Krishna wants to steal butter, that stealing is the highest principle of morality because it's pleasing him. If Krishna wants to have wonderful loving relationships with the gopis of Braja in the middle of the night, in the forest, that is the highest principle of morality because it is his will. And the gopis in no way acted immoral. In fact, they were acting according to the supermost, supreme, highest principles of morality because they were simply surrendering to Krishna's will. They were pleasing Krishna. And Krishna asked Yudhisthira to lie. And even Krishna himself, in the Bhagavatam, it doesn't say whether Krishna ate dirt or not. But in the Gargav Samhita, it actually says he did. But Krishna said, I didn't do it. And sometimes when he would steal the butter and yogurt from gopis, he would say, no, Mataji, I didn't do it. Why would I do it? You feed me so much. Why would I want to go to their houses to steal? Is this lying? Not the slightest bit lying. It is the absolute truth. So whatever emanates from his mouth is the absolute truth. Whatever his desire is the absolute truth. For us to try to be truthful in this world on a material level is still a lie. We should understand this. When people who are not Krishna conscious, who are not surrendering to Krishna, when they are very honest in this world, they're lying. Their honesty is a lie. Why? Because the constitutional position of their soul is Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nitya Das, that they are servants of Krishna. And if they're not being honest to please Krishna, in harmony with Krishna, then they're actually in disharmony with Krishna's will. It's immoral. Because the basis of their so-called truth is a misconception, an illusion, a lie. The lie is that they are these bodies. The lie is that they're thinking that they're the enjoyers. The lie is that they're thinking they're the controller. And on the basis of all of these mountains of lies, they tell what they call the truth. This is not real truth. But what Krishna says is the absolute truth. And what Krishna desires is the absolute truth. And therefore, Krishna says, sarva dharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshai shamimasacha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. That means surrender to Krishna, means to surrender to his will, surrender to his desire. Krishna told this to Arjuna. Arjuna was asked by Krishna on that battlefield to fight and to kill, and it was the highest morality. It was the purest goodness for him to kill, because that was the desire of Krishna. And in his bout of combat with Karna, Krishna asked him to cheat and go against moral codes of Kshatriya fighting. But because it was the will of Krishna, it wasn't against, it may have been against materialistic codes which create bondage in this world, but it was actually the highest principle of morality. It was based on the highest code of conduct, to live in harmony with the will of Krishna. And that's why Krishna says, aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshai shamima. If you surrender to me, there's no sin. He will protect you from all sins. To forget Krishna, to do anything out of devotional service to Krishna, in the highest sense, is sinful. And here we find something that materialistic people who read the Vedas according to the principles of Artha, Kama, Dhamma, and Moksha, they are not coming to understand the Vedas for its essence. Vedais ca sarver aham eva vedyo vedante krit vedavit eva chaham. Krishna says, I am the compiler of the Vedas. All the Vedas are Vedanta. The conclusion of all Vedas is to know me. But when we approach Veda with the desire for economic development, religiosity, sense gratification, or liberation, then our whole conception of the Vedic literatures is based on a material principle. And for those people, they find it very confusing how Parasara Muni and Satyavati, the daughter of Vasu, came together in such an apparently controversial way to give birth to Vedavyas. And here it is explained that Parasara Muni was a great yogi, a great sage, a liberated soul. But it appears that he engaged in an immoral activity. There was nothing immoral, not even a tinge of immorality in what he had done, because Vedavyas is an incarnation of Krishna himself. And whatever the Lord wants is morality. He wanted to appear in this way to show the world that he is above and beyond the questions, the doubts, and the limitations of our material conceptions. He's totally transcendental and pure. So, of course, unscrupulous, rascal people who are not properly trained under a bona fide spiritual master, they use the various pure transcendental sections of the Vedas to justify their own illicit activities and desires. Just like in Vrindavan, in Bengal, there are many so-called great yogis, gurus, sadhus, babajis, who perform various ras, lila exchanges with young girls, sometimes young men. And they explain, you see, Krishna has done, and I am his empowered representative, so I have the power of attorney to do as he has done. And this is all reciprocation of love. This is intimacy that I'm sharing with you, that's very confidential. Should not tell anyone, they'll never understand it. And in this way they cheat people on the basis of Krishna has done in the scripture. Therefore it is said, that one must understand the Vedas through the grace and the blessings of a bona fide spiritual master. Tad vijnanartham sagurum eva abhigacchet. Eva abhigacchet means absolutely necessary. Emphatically, you must approach the Vedas through a proper spiritual master in disciplic succession. If you try to read the Vedas on your own, you will be bewildered and confused. And instead of bringing you to higher principles of elevation, it may even degrade you. So similarly, the great acharyas, they explain in such simple, wonderful terms, with great confidence, how wonderful Parasara Muni is. He's the speaker of the Vishnu Purana, which is the most important of all the scriptures. And Srila Prabhupada and all of the acharyas in our line, they are always quoting that beautiful verse, Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashashriya jnana vairagyasya sanam bhaga athingana. More than any other verse, perhaps, this establishes who is Bhagavan, what are the qualifications of the Supreme Personality of God, that he possesses all opulences in full, complete beauty and knowledge and strength and wealth and fame and renunciation. They're quoting Parasara Muni as one of the greatest authorities. So Srila Prabhupada used to say, if you want to dance with young girls, first lift Govardhan Hill with the little finger of your left hand and hold it up for 7 days and seven nights. Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill before he performed the Ras Lila. Also, Krishna killed Putana, Trinavarta, Aghasura. Krishna also showed the entire universe within his very little mouth to his mother. You do all these things. Prove yourself to be the Supreme Absolute Truth, Bhagavan. And then you can consider dancing with young ladies. And similarly, Parasara Muni, if you can have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the product of your loving exchange with a woman, then you can have it. But it's a big risk. What if Vyasadeva isn't born? Then you have to suffer terrible, hellish, sinful reactions. And you cannot escape it. So we understand that these great personalities, they were not in the slightest bit immoral. They were actually living by the highest principles of code and conduct because they were surrendered to the sweet will of Krishna. Srila Veda Vyas, the literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what he has given to the world, and such a wonderful way in which he appeared in this world. Just to prove to us, we could say that he's completely transcendental. He's above and beyond question. And we worship Satyavati. And we worship Parasara Muni for their pure unalloyed devotion. So these things must be understood very carefully in the association of serious devotees under the guidance of such acharyas, Bhakti Vinod, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada. And we must simply repeat those words and accept those words as true, as absolute truth. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepted Vedavyas, he accepted Krishna, but in his own life, he was so strictly following all the principles. As a sannyasi, as a grihastha, to teach that don't think that you can get away with doing immoral things. Understand the transcendental revelation of the scriptures, but don't try to imitate. Follow the instruction. If you imitate Parasara Muni, you will go to hell. But if you follow what he says in the Vishnu Purana, you will go back to Godhead. Because he was a purely liberated soul. But does this mean a guru can say, do what I say, but not what I do? Absolutely not. Acharya means one who teaches by example. His life must be one with his words, and his words must be one with Krishna's words. But such extraordinary, unique personalities who are directly involved personally with the advent and lila of the Lord, they are exceptional, and they must be understood as exceptional. Questions?
Lord Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita that whatever the great man does, the common man follows. Now on one side he says on that basis, and on the other side, if you see all the four regulatory principles, if you see all four regulatory principles, like no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, if you take about no intoxication itself, now Lord Balram, who is the first incarnation of Lord Krishna, he always, we see in Bhagavatam, he takes Varuni, that's one of the intoxicating thing. Talking about illicit sex also, on a gross level, Lord Balram as well as Lord Krishna, they used to have the dance with the gopis, this and that. Even in gambling also, Yudhishthir Maharaj, who is considered one of the pure devotee, he also is engaged in gambling. Now in this basis, we are completely on a neophyte angle. We always have one thing in our mind that whatever the great man does, the common man has to follow. Now, when we see all these things, this thing, whatever you are saying, is very, very on a higher platform. We are on a very, very neophyte stage. We only have one thing in our mind that whatever great man does, we have to just follow that. But once we see all these things, our mind gets disturbed. So how to get that conviction, you know, this thing is completely different, I have to follow only four regulatory principles and go in a very straightforward way.
First of all, according to moral codes, for a king and a kshatriya, gambling is not immoral. It was part of their chivalrous rights. So Yudhishthira was not immoral in what he did. But as far as Balaram and Krishna, they were revealing the transcendental realm of the spiritual world. And this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Everything that Krishna does and everything that takes place in the spiritual world is absolutely pure and perfect. There is no exploitation. But perverted reflection means when those same activities take place in this material world, they are done out of lust and pride and ignorance and passion. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the banyan tree on the bank of the body of water. What is highest is lowest in the reflection, and vice versa. So all of the tendencies that we have, their origin in its purest form is in the spiritual world. Why we have a tendency for intoxication? If Krishna didn't have that tendency, we wouldn't. We're part and parcel of Krishna. Balaramji drinks Varuni and becomes very happy. But we must know that that intoxication is without the slightest tinge of exploitation in the spiritual world. In this material world, intoxication doesn't make our consciousness more aware, more ecstatic, and more blissful spiritually. It destroys our spiritual sentiments, it dulls our mind, it destroys our body. So we must understand, according to Shukadeva Goswami, we must understand the Bhagavad Gita and the first nine cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully before understanding the completely pure transcendental nature of Krishna and Balaram and their activities. You see, Balaram is the supreme enjoyer. And everything is meant for his enjoyment. And that is perfectly moral because it's true. Krishna is Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Bhoktaram Jagatapasam. Krishna is the proprietor, and everything that has been created materially and spiritually was created for his enjoyment only. So whatever he wants to enjoy is not immoral because it's meant for him. But the jivatma is meant for his enjoyment. The jivatma is not the proprietor of anything. Therefore, if we try to enjoy anything of this world apart from Krishna's desire, it is sinful and immoral. So we must know the distinction between the jivatma and the paramatma. For us to take intoxication is for our own personal sense gratification. It's sinful. Because we are not the enjoyers. We're not meant to enjoy these matters. But Krishna is meant to enjoy everything. Therefore, when Balaram drinks Varuni, even the greatest sannyasis who have given up every type of sinful activity to the minutest detail, they weep tears of ecstasy
and raise their arms and chant Jai Baladev when they hear about him drinking Varuni. Because they understand that he has the right to enjoy everything, because he is the supreme enjoyer. And his enjoyment is transcendental to the base qualities of material consciousness. It is pure and perfect. But in our imperfect state, we want to imitate God, and that is the problem. Every jivatma in this world misusing their independence, rebellious against the will of God, in their own ways they want to imitate the Supreme Lord. They want to be the enjoyer and the controller. And to the degree they want to do like this, to the degree they suffer bondage. You cannot imitate Krishna. That is the original sin. We are eternally the servants of Krishna. We are eternally for the enjoyment of Krishna and Balaram. And the spiritual literatures of the Western world, they cannot take people to such a high level of transcendental understanding. Therefore, they are basically just crashing down on you with moral principles, which is important. But these higher principles of the Vedas, they are teaching us the transcendental nature of Krishna, which is the highest knowledge. But unless you are strictly following the four regulative principles, unless you are strictly following the rules and regulations of the great acharyas, yama, niyama, it is impossible to have the slightest access of any understanding of the transcendental nature of Krishna. It is cheap, it is sahajya, and it must be thrown away. We can have nothing to do with such a consciousness. Does that answer your question?
Parasuram Muni, if the great devotees, Parasuram Muni,
understand. Don't, if you try to see it materially, you will be bewildered. This was the pastime of the Supreme Personality of Godhead adventing in this world, which is a totally pure transcendental activity. If you try to compare it to any type of material consideration, you'll never understand it. Do not think that just by chance Vedavyasa appeared through this exchange. From the beginning of to the end of this exchange, it was a purely transcendental activity of the appearance of the Lord in this world. And those who understand from the point of view of the Bhagavatam, they see it this way. Those who simply read the Mahabharata, who are mostly Karmakandis, they are confused about the whole thing. They explain it in different ways.
So don't commit the offense to such a great soul by making any connection between the transcendental appearance of the Lord, enacted by the Lord himself through his devotees, and the materialistic activities of people who cannot control their senses. You don't even try to make the slightest connection between the two, because it has nothing to do with it. Krishna is so merciful that he allows everyone to have their justifications to engage in sinful life. So people who want to engage in sinful life on the basis of misconceiving the scriptures, Krishna gives them so many nice evidences
by which they can be rascals. Those who want the truth, Krishna presents the most ambrosial nectarine pastimes which reveal the highest truths.
Questions?
To yesterday's class, can I ask you? So, yesterday the question was asked about, we know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects except some portions of the Vedas. Hmm. So then the answer was given that he was not well versed in certain parts of the Vedas. But here we see in the chapter 1, text 7, it is said that you are well versed in all the scriptures famous for religious life and the Puranas and the histories as well. Hmm. So in this whole chapter they are praising Suta Goswami or Nanacharya, Sitanda Vyasa san, unless one is completely well versed in the scriptures. So what exactly was he not well versed in, Maharaj?
To be well versed in the scriptures means to have understood and realized the conclusion of the scriptures, the Siddhanta. Srila Prabhupada was given the title by his godbrothers, Bhakti Vedanta. The anta, the final conclusion of all the Vedas, is bhakti. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam ampapadyate vasudeva sarvam iti samahatma satura. One who after many births following religious principles comes to the point of real knowledge, they surrender to Vasudeva, knowing him to be the cause of all causes and all that is. In fact, it is said that one who is sincerely chanting the holy names has already gone through all of the proper understandings of the Vedas, because that's the conclusion, to take shelter of Krishna as the personality of Godhead through the chanting of his names. So one who is actually well versed in the Vedas is one who is well versed in the conclusion of the Vedas. Within the 18 Puranas, there are 6 for those in the mode of ignorance, 6 for those in the mode of passion, and 6 for those in the mode of goodness. Have you ever heard the great Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas quoting the scriptures for those in the mode of ignorance? How to slaughter goats and buffaloes? That's also in the Vedas. How to have proper, how to highlight the pleasure of your sex life, that's also in the scriptures, for those in the mode of passion. But great acharyas, not only do they not care anything for those Vedas, most likely they really don't know them at all, because they don't care about them. They're not well versed in those scriptures, because they're not revealing the conclusions, the Siddhanta. Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Astanga Kanda, the Vedas are filled with that. And the bhaktas, generally, they don't even know about those things. They just know in principle that it's Kaitava Dharma. Why waste our time with it? Dharmo prochita kaivatavotra. Bhagavatam says, we kick out all these Vedas. We kick them out. We don't want them. Now, there are certain Brahmins who don't understand the conclusions of the Vedas. They meticulously try to understand the rituals and the philosophies and the teachings of all. But when we come to the point of view of Srimad Bhagavatam, we kick away all these things. We don't care for them. We know in principle that it's Kaitava Dharma, it's cheating religion. Traigunya vishaya veda nistraigunat bhavarjuna. Niradvanvo nitya shatvashto niyogakshema atmavan.
Krishna says himself, the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. Give them up, Arjuna. Kick them out. Be established in the self. Always think of me. Surrender to me. So great acharyas, it is not required that they are well versed in all the sections of the Vedas. They understand the essential Vedas and they understand the conclusion of all the Vedas.
Vasudeva saravamiti samahatmas.
To surrender to Krishna. And that is all required. This is the position of Suta Goswami. Suta Goswami heard from Shukadev Goswami. Shukadev Goswami kicked out all Kaitava Dharma and only gave the cream of all Vedic literature. And that's what Suta Goswami was repeating. Therefore, he is considered the foremost scholar of the Vedas because he understood the conclusion. And he may not be well versed in all of the other lesser aspects. You have to be a Sanskrit scholar. It is not that you have to chant slokas with perfect grammar, rhythm, and pronunciation. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Rangakshetra, he met that Brahmin, and his recitation of the Bhagavad Gita was not correct at all. Not only that, he couldn't even understand what he was reading. But because he was so obediently and humbly serving the order of his guru, by his guru's grace, he was seeing Krishna directly in each word. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You are the foremost authority and scholar of the Gita because you have understood the conclusion of the Gita." Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyajim namaskuru. To always think of Krishna, to always be his devotee, to worship him and offer your homage to him. That is the difference between, as Prabhupada said, between a Brahmin and a Parivrajakacharya. A Parivrajakacharya is one who preaches the essence. He may not know all the slokas, he may not know all of the rituals, he may not know all of the mantras, but he knows the conclusion. And he knows those parts of the Vedas that substantiate and establish that conclusion. He doesn't care for the other. He doesn't want to substantiate or establish Jnana Karana Kanda, Karma Kanda, or Astanga Kanda. He takes only those sections of the Vedas that establish Upasana Kanda, pure bhakti. And he's learned to establish that. Does that answer your question?